All right, welcome back. Who's talking? Jim Hobgood, Frank Maloney, Michael Tusky here. We'll be joined shortly by David Teal from the Daily Press down in the Tidewater region. I think he's actually in Norfolk, Virginia. And you're listening to Who's Talking. We're going to talk to David a little bit about ACC basketball and his assessment of where the league is as we are three or four games into the schedule for everybody. So I guess that's about a quarter of the way through the league season. You know, incidentally, Frank, as I told you, I did get the application for ACC tournament credentials today. So, you know, once you start playing those ACC games, you know, you go downhill in a hurry, and before you know it, we're going to be thinking about Atlanta and the ACC tournament, and I think in Virginia's case this year, we're going to be thinking about the NCAA tournament, which is kind of exciting.
Well, it's about time. looking at the ACC right now, you know, Duke is sitting there at 3-0, Carolina's 2-1, Maryland State, Florida State, and BC are all at 2-1.
Well, Florida State's 3-1 now. They won last night.
That's true. Virginia, assuming they take care of business and beat Georgia Tech on the road, we will join that large group of teams and right back in the thick of it. And then we come home and play Virginia Tech on Sunday night in what will be a barn burner. And I understand there's less than 500 tickets remaining. So if you're interested in the game, and it will be a hotly contested battle, I'm sure, there's still a chance to get a ticket. You better get moving, though, because I think they'll be gone certainly by tomorrow.
Yeah.
Exciting, though, to get a sellout. I mean, it's going to be fun.
Well, it'll be a sellout, but there'll be a lot of hokey colors in there, too. But they can buy tickets as well. But anyway,
that's poppycock.
At any rate, David Teal, we have him on the line. He's the sports writer of the year in Virginia. David has been around the ACC in Virginia for at least a couple of years, hadn't it been, David? How long has it been? How long have you been on the beat?
Well, I've been around for about 27 years, so that's more than a couple.
I was just trying to be kind because you look so young. That's the
key. Yeah, oh, yeah, that bald spot doesn't give anything away.
Well, at any rate, we appreciate you taking a few minutes to join us. Why don't we start with your assessment of the ACC in the early stages of the conference play?
I think the operative word here, Jim, is chaos. when a Florida State team can be 0-2 against the Ivy League and then shellack North Carolina by 33, the Tar Heels' worst conference loss in 49 years, I mean, we can start right there. And then, you know, Boston College has had some really bad losses, and then they all of a sudden rise up and beat Clemson and Virginia Tech in back-to-back games. I think not even the most ardent UVA fan would say the Cavaliers are the best team in the league, but I think you can make the case that UVA has been the most consistent team in the league.
Wow.
I mean, 14-2, both losses close. Now, granted, TCU, not a terribly impressive team. But gosh, you know, I thought Virginia competed great down at Cameron the other night, and the Cavs are the only team in the league to not have a double-digit loss.
What do you attribute that consistency to?
Experience. If you look at Virginia's roster, the Cavaliers have more starts and more minutes played among their veterans than any team in the conference. And you combine that with the third season of Tony Bennett's tenure as coach, and I think you have a group that knows what it wants to do, knows how it wants to go about things on both ends of the floor, especially defensively, which has long been Coach Bennett's forte. And you see the formation not only of a team but also a program.
Well, you mentioned, I'll get Frank in here in a minute, I'm sorry, but you mentioned defense, and also, of course, you have to talk about Mike Scott relative to experience and the performance that he's had throughout the year. Speaking of consistent, he's almost an automatic double-double.
He really is, Jim. I mean, gosh, he's leading the conference in shooting percentage. I believe it's almost 59% from the field. He's among the top six in both scoring and rebounding. And as I'm sure your listeners are aware, after the Duke game the other night, I mean, Mike Krzyzewski just gushed about the guy, especially the first half he had, where he had 16 points and several other baskets, you know, came directly or indirectly off his passes out of low post double teams. He's become very adept at that. And now he's, and you're old enough, like I am, when he shoots that fadeaway kind of off one foot, it's like, you know, is this guy Elvin Hayes or what? I mean, he really is good at it. I mean, I think the only thing that's missing is that the Big E used to use the glass an awful lot, and Mike probably doesn't do that as much.
You know, it's strange, now that you've mentioned that, Elvin Hayes liked to set up in the left block, to the left side of the hoop, and Mike Scott would prefer, I think, most times to be on the right side of the block. When you're watching a player like Scott or Harrison Barnes or you know, one of the Plumleys or whatever, what do you notice about the skill sets that maybe might separate Scott and give him a chance to be an NBA player?
Well, I think it's that face up game. Mm-hmm. Is that he has become a very good shooter in that, what, 15 to 17 foot range. You know, makes the occasional three. I mean, he's not as explosive off his feet, you know, as some. I think it's Mason Plumlee, Miles Plumlee, yeah, who's really explosive off his feet. But I think Mike's going to have a real good look from an NBA team. Now, would you like him to be 6'10"? Absolutely. But, his skill set. And another thing you like about him is he's improved during, you know, throughout his career. His arc has always been on the upward side.
Dave, we've been talking about it tonight. There are four games on the conference schedule tomorrow night. Two are particularly interesting. Of course, one is our game, the Virginia game at Georgia Tech, and the other one, which I think will be fascinating, is Virginia Tech hosting North Carolina. How do you break down those games?
Well, I think you're right. I think they're both fascinating. Virginia's game, Jim, from the standpoint of, you know, how did the Cavaliers respond from the other night? You know, Georgia Tech's got a sophomore core there that has some experience, but playing for a first-year coach in Brian Gregory. Phillips Arena won't be full. It's not going to be nearly as electric an atmosphere as Cameron. So Virginia might have to, you know, kind of produce its own energy. So I'm very curious to see how the Cavaliers respond there. And then you go down to Blacksburg, where I'll be tomorrow night, and you just wonder, okay, you know, how fierce were the Tar Heels practices this week? you know darn well that Coach Williams really got after him. And then I wonder about the crowd at Castle Coliseum. Virginia Tech in its home ACC opener against Florida State had its smallest crowd for an ACC game since it joined the conference. And I wonder with this 0-3 start if maybe the fan base is getting a little uneasy about the direction of the team, if not the program. And this is a Tech team that is walking a real fine line. They've been below 40% from the field in three straight games, and that's the first time that's happened in 7 years. So they need to start playing better. And, boy, you would think they're catching Carolina at the worst possible time.
Yeah, it'll really be interesting. Well, Dave, we appreciate your taking a couple of minutes to join us. And for our audience, Dave may be the foremost expert around the ACC at bracketology. when tournament time comes, Dave, we may have to have you back on to give your predictions relative to who's getting in and where they're going to be seated and all that stuff, which will be of great interest. But at any rate, we thank you for your time tonight.
Be my pleasure. I think the Cavaliers will be in that discussion.
We're looking forward to that. But at any rate, David Teal of the Daily Press down there in Norfolk joining us tonight. And I think momentarily we're going to switch over to the recruiting reign here. We're going to be calling Chris Horn here momentarily to talk a little recruiting still both football and basketball.
We've got a caller. I believe Eric is on the line. I think we're going to take this call. Eric, are you there?
Yeah, hey. I'm enjoying the...
Very good. Tell us what kind of question have you got tonight?
Yeah, it was more of a comment. Call me crazy, but I'm seeing a lot of similarities with this squad to the old Jeff Jones squad back in the mid-90s that made that deep turning run. If you look at the starting five, they almost match up in terms of each player's individual style. I mean, Yuri Barnes and Asante, and then you got the defender, rebounder, post presence. Junior Burrow versus Mike Scott. You got a double-double guy, consistent scorer down low. Williford and Joe Harris. Zaglinski, candle-to-candle the staples, but similar styles. And then a defensive floor leader, Harold Dean versus Jontel Evans. See a lot of similarities of that squad back in the day, and who knows, they might make a deep turning run this year.
Well, I think that's possible. The one similarity that's not there, and we're hopeful of having him on the show, or this person on the show as early as next week, is Corey Alexander. I don't think we have a guard with the offensive skills of Corey Alexander. Had we had somebody with that kind of skill set, I think we would have won the game at Duke.
We'd have won by 15.
Not come up short. But you're right. I mean, this team is they're playing, as Dave Teal said, consistently. They play good defense. So if they can get some balanced scoring, they could be competitive with anybody.
All right. Thank you, Eric, for your call. All right. I think we've got Chris Horn on the line. Chris, are you there?
I'm here.
Chris, good timing. We had to take that caller. We'd like to give our callers a chance to get in, particularly on a night like this. We didn't have a chance to even tease you. First off, this is Chris Horn from thesaber.com. He's our recruiting expert and has been a frequent guest on our show for the last couple of years. And, Chris, give us the latest and greatest. What's going on in football?
Yeah, well, signing day in 2 weeks exactly, so kind of winding down right now. For the most part, Virginia has been pretty much finished. The class has pretty much been wrapped up for quite some time, really since the summer. But there are a few prospects. Certainly Virginia is trying to get in the fold before signing day rolls around. Just a few to mention, a few of the players that Virginia has the best chance with, I would say. There's Devontae Walker, who's a running back / cornerback out of Virginia Beach. He's expected to take an official visit to Virginia this weekend. He's also considering the University of Richmond. At this point, it looks like he's leaning towards Virginia, and Virginia is recruiting him as a cornerback. And then Imani Cross is a running back out of the state of Georgia. He's a big bruiser type of running back, 6'1", 225 pounds.
That's what I'm talking about.
Sure. Yeah.
That's what we need. We need somebody to hit the hole and move the pile.
Right, he's got that Clifton Richardson type size to him, so he's definitely that type of guy. And he has just wrapped up an official visit to Kentucky. He has also been to East Carolina. He's going to Nebraska this Friday and Saturday, and is expected to go to Virginia on Sunday through next Tuesday. And he may be finished, but there are a lot of schools trying to get in the picture, most notably Penn State, with obviously the new head coach on board. They're trying to get in the mix with him as well. So those are real kind of probably the two best shots in terms of the guys that have been offered by Virginia. And Virginia is also still in pursuit of Stephon Diggs, who's a five-star receiver out of Maryland. At this point, he's supposed to take an official visit to Florida this weekend, and he's already been to California and Auburn. So Virginia is a handful of schools, and a handful of other schools are trying to maybe lock him up for an official visit. If Virginia isn't able to get one, obviously, it's likely that he's going to go elsewhere.
All right, question for you with Stephon Diggs. He is a five-star, big, tall kid. I think he's about 6'2", right, about 190?
About 6'1", but super super quick and definitely fast. Yeah, about 185, 190.
All right, so what are the odds with him? Are we in the hunt, or are we sort of on the outside hoping to get on the inside, or what?
At this point, I think a good barometer is if Virginia is able to land an official, and right now he hasn't set one. So at this point, I would say I wouldn't get your hopes up, but you never know. Coach London and Coach Poindexter are the two main recruiters, I guess, for Virginia with him, and obviously they can do a pretty good job recruiting themselves. But at this point, unless he sets an official, I would say he's likely going to go elsewhere.
All right, Grayson Lambert, is he still on track to come early, the quarterback?
Yes, Yep, he's actually already in Charlottesville, already enrolled, and I believe they revealed his that he is on the roster today on VirginiaSports.com. So, yeah, he's the only early enrollee for this year's class, but following in the footsteps of David Watford, who a quarterback who did it last year. And I think a lot of people are excited to see what Grayson can do. He's got that 6'5", 210-pound frame, and he's got a cannon for an arm. So I'm sure a lot of people are going to watch out for him, especially in the spring practice.
All right, we have a basketball question. We talked about this very recently with Coach Tony Bennett. He implied that there was still a very good chance he might bring a fifth player onto this class, the 2012 class, for basketball.
It looks like with Tevin Jones enrolling early out of Fishburne, who signed in the 2012 class, players who enroll early, they can kind of count towards either this particular class or last year's class. So that may enable them to pick up maybe two more if they would choose to. But I have to no set names at this point, but I have to think that they're looking into the post and trying to add somebody in the low post to go along with next year's group, which is going to be Akil Mitchell, Atkins, and Mike Toby. So you only have those three, so certainly some room for some bodies down low.
Chris, we're visiting with Chris Horn, the Sabre recruiting expert. We only have about 15 seconds, but replacement of offensive production, Mike Scott's going to be a big hole to fill. Is this Justin Anderson got the kind of skills to come in and make an immediate impact?
Yeah, I think his impact may be more all around as opposed to a guy who you can expect to come in and put up the offensive production that Mike Scott, although he's certainly capable of scoring double digits, I would say, per game. But in terms of that low post production, certainly that's something that Virginia is going to be looking for. And I know Mike Toby, physically, if he can do it, great. But he's a guy with a lot of offensive potential as a 6'11 center.
All right. Unfortunately, Chris, we've got to jump. We've had some people backed up tonight, but thank you. We're going to bring you back here in a couple of weeks to break down signing day, which, believe it or not, is right around the corner on February 1st. Chris Horn with us from the Sabre. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
We're headed for our last break before our final segment, and hope you'll stay with us as we do our Olympic sports report and we sort of predict what's going to happen in the coming weekend. Stay with us.